I'm Stella Bellis. I work for Manaaki Whenua Land Care Research in Lower Hutt, New Zealand, as a scientist in the Image Analysis Group.
Is it Image Analysis now, is it? Fair enough. And I'm Stephen McNeil from the same organisation.
Good evening, Stella and Stephen. Welcome to Australia.
Good evening.
Good evening, Andrew.
Does New Zealand use satellites at all?
Oh, yes. There are the obvious uses of using them in meteorology and communications, but we also use them in Earth Resources remote sensing as well, yes.
And has this been done for some time, or is it just a recent development?
New Zealand was before my time, but we've been using it since the early 70s with the early Landsat series, and we've been using them more or less continuously since then. But Stella may be able to give you some more details.
Yes. I agree with Stephen. We've been using them since 1972, when we were one of the principal investigators for NASA on their Landsat 2 program. We don't use satellites as operationally as Australia does, because we don't have our own receiving station as you do in Alice Springs. So we're reliant on the satellite operators having a tape recorder on board their satellites. Luckily, most of them do.
So what satellites do you access?
At the moment, we're accessing the SPOT satellite. We do use Landsat multispectral scanner and thematic mapper data as well. We're principal investigators with the Japanese on their announcement of opportunity for Japan Earth Resources Satellite 1, which we'll probably talk about later because that's really interesting. Stephen, any more?
NOAA, OVHRR. We use the NOAA satellite, which is really a meteorological satellite, and we also use that for vegetation and also sea surface temperature studies as well.
Okay. Any plans to use some of the future satellites coming up, such as RADARSAT and EOS and that sort of thing?
RADARSAT's an obvious one because it's a radar satellite, and New Zealand's good from a prime candidate to use radar satellites because most of New Zealand is generally covered by cloud, and so we have great problems when we need imagery in a hurry. We have to rely on things like radar satellites. Again, one of the problems, though, is that we don't have a reception facility. We have to rely on those satellites that have got transmission facilities or onboard tape recorders.
Hence the name Aotearoa, of course.
Yes, Land of the Long White Cloud.
Yes. Okay. Who uses the data once it's got down?
Well, we use it ourselves for our own research purposes. We also have a whole variety of customers that use the data as well. Some of them are in the government sector, and they use it for mapping and for monitoring resources around the country. But also there are a whole increasing range of customers in the local government sector, government authorities, city councils and of that nature, that want to map some of the features that are in their particular patch. And remote sensing is proving to be an increasingly cost-effective way to update spatial information databases, GIS, as they're called, geographic information systems, with that data. Oh, there was also one other user of the data, and that is an increasingly large market of New Zealand companies that are using the data for overseas projects. They may use it in countries that don't have very good mapping, and so satellite imagery can act as a good base map in that area. And Stella probably knows some more direct examples.
Yes, we have several companies that have been working in South America and Southeast Asia that make inquiries from us from time to time about what data is available. Of course, sometimes they're also working in areas which suffer from the New Zealand cloud problems. And we cannot always supply data to them, but certainly it's a very, very useful source of information for them.
Okay, and you mentioned GIS, or Geographic Information Systems. What are they?
A geographic information system is a very complicated name for something that is relatively straightforward. It's like a database, a computer database that has some spatial sense. So you don't inquire features or information just by a string or some kind of simple relation. You inquire by way of spatial relation. You might say, show me all the points in this area that are 2 kilometres from the nearest motorway, for instance, or show me all the points that are within 2 kilometres of such and such a land boundary. So that these are databases that understand spatial relationships.
In Australia, there are a lot of companies which are doing what we call value-added services. They get the data, usually from ACRES, or the Australian Centre for Remote Sensing, and then they process the data so that some end user can then go on and use it. Does that happen in New Zealand, or does it straight from the data straight to the end user?
Well, it's a situation that's changing, and we're quite a wee way behind Australia in some respects in this, partly because there's quite a lack in data. But organisations such as ours that have been using the data for many years have started to move into the value-added market, and a number of new users are starting to use it at the higher level. So I think as time goes on, we're seeing more and more users starting to enter the field. Some of them are coming from GIS market, and they're starting to develop value-added products and services that add on to existing remote sensing users.
Mm. You're employed by Lankia Research New Zealand. Who are they? How many people do they employ? What do they do?
In the past, there were a whole variety of organisations that used to cover research and development in New Zealand. And the largest of these was probably the Department of Scientific and Industrial Research. It's very much like the CSIRO here in Australia. In 1992, that organisation, amongst several others, was disbanded, and in its place were created 10 Crown-owned research institutes, or CRIs as they're called, and we are one of those 10 Crown research institutes. Lankia Research is about 300 people strong, I think that's correct, and we're spread from Auckland through to Dunedin. We have a number of functions, but broadly we could be called an organisation for sustainable land management practices, both in terms of research and in terms of services as well.
Is our 300 or so staff cover a whole range of earth scientist and natural scientist specialities? We'd have botanists, zoologists, entomologists, soil scientists, conservationists, agronomists, economists. Basically, you could say that a lot of our work goes on sustainable land management. Some of our major programs at the moment would include the rabbit land management program. We have a terrible problem, especially in our South Island hill country, with rabbits, which are totally out of control. And unlike Australia, we have not introduced myxomatosis at this stage. It is a contentious issue in our country. We also have people looking at tussock grasslands and how to sustain them, how to keep the natural environments in the hill country but still allow the range holders the chance to use their own land. We have people looking at forests and how we should be conserving our native forests. And we have a lot of people looking at the susceptibility of land to damage, for example, by flooding or by erosion after major storms. Like a lot of countries, everybody ripped into New Zealand about 100 years ago, took down as much forest as possible, planted as much grass as possible, and started growing sheep. And nowadays we realise that this is not the most appropriate use for all types of land, especially when it's steep and especially when it is particular soil types. And we're looking now at a much more complicated way of using the land, if you like, so that on perhaps an individual farm you'll have some native bush left, you'll have some exotic forest, and you'll also have your traditional sheep.
And that's where remote sensing can come in, because you can detect some of the changes that have occurred over time, see where scars, slips and other things have occurred as a result of floods and all sorts of other kinds of damage, and assess what kind of changes have occurred as a result of perhaps rehabilitation on the land.
Mm. And is Lankia Research New Zealand self-supporting, or is it funded by the government?
Lankia Research has to be effectively self-supporting. We're not appropriation funded. We have about 70% of our income comes from research, and that's competitively based via a research grant system in New Zealand. So we have to compete for funds for that. The remainder of our funds we have to obtain from sale of services, consultancy, overseas consultancy and so on, and sale of products. We also have to we have obligations to the Crown to maintain certain key data sets, for instance the maintenance of native insect collection or flora and fauna, and that's part of our function, part of our contract effectively with the Crown.
Right, we're just going to take a flip back in time now. to 1979 to a television program that I did in New Zealand with South Pacific Television, as it was then called. And we have Ross Cochrane, who was then head of the remote sensing department at the Auckland University, asking for a ground station in New Zealand to receive this sort of data.
Land use maps then can be drawn from these products. We can see, therefore, that Landsat is a very valuable resource tool that has enormous potential. Newer satellites will give better, more detailed information. But for maximum practical use, we need real-time data from our own ground receiving station in New Zealand for this and for other satellite data.
Thank you, Ross. That was most interesting, and I hope you do get your ground station.
Well, Stella, you heard the plea there and my urging that this did happen. What happened since 1979? New Zealand, I believe, still doesn't have a ground station.
No, we don't, Andrew. We're very sorry about this. We'd very much like one. We have actually called for tenders at one stage. We got that far. We worked out who was going to be the person that would gain the great honour of building the New Zealand receiving station. We got our cabinet to approve it, and then nothing happened, and it just sort of sank back. And I'm afraid now, with our government's user pays philosophy, the chances of there being a one-off appropriation for a receiving station are really quite slim, much though I'd like to think that they weren't. However, we understand that the second Australian receiving station in Hobart is going to become operational soon, and that the footprint from this station will cover a considerable portion, or perhaps even most of New Zealand. And we're extremely interested in this possibility, aren't we, Stephen?
We are, but it doesn't quite cover all of New Zealand, and perhaps not as reliably as we would like. So we're always going to be hampered by that difficulty, that some of the newer missions just assume that you have a reception facility available. But it's true to say that a lot of the economics of reception facilities have changed. It is possible to build ground stations now that are portable, and they are available, but there are short-term costs that are involved in that. So it's a matter of balancing economics and with the need, and that's where the difficulty comes.
It's because, you know, electronics improving and so on, ground stations everywhere in all forms using satellites are getting smaller and smaller. So, you know, perhaps a 1979 investment would have been a multi-million dollar investment, but wouldn't it be much cheaper now?
It's cheaper now, but the fixed costs are pretty much the same. And the largest cost is really the antenna, and that's where a substantial part of the cost really has to come. There isn't any incentive for the large satellite providers, the people who have the satellites, to increase the power on the satellite so that you can have smaller antennas. Therefore, you've got to have pretty much a fixed cost for that part of the whole proceedings. The other issue is that for the newer satellites, they have much increased data rates. Current satellites have got downlink rates merely measured in a few megabits per second, 25 megabits per second perhaps. The newer satellites are up at 85, 100, 130, and even talking about 300 megabytes per second. And when you start talking about those sort of rates, you can be talking about gigabytes per day of data, and the costs associated with that can only be imagined.
So you'd have to invest in optical data storage and stuff like that as well, wouldn't you?
Pretty much mandatory nowadays to manage that amount of data, yes.
Well, thank you, Stella and Stephen, for joining us tonight on The Space Show, and we hope that you enjoy your stay here in Australia.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good night.